From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when Willow Domestic Violence Center released new numbers on local domestic violence. And the numbers had me wondering, does Rochester do a better job than most at reporting domestic violence? Or does our community have a particular problem in this area? The numbers should be a call to action either way. Now, one out of four children are exposed to family violence in their lifetime, and you can try to imagine the lifelong impact of violence on a child, whether it's directly against the child or even just a five-year-old witnessing a father beating a mother, sometimes a single event, but sometimes abuse that happens for years. This hour, we're going to explore the local numbers. We'll talk about our listeners' contributions to the program, and then solutions as well, what we all should be doing going forward. I'm wearing purple. It is Domestic Violence Awareness, and I'm glad to have our panel here. Jamie Saunders is back. She's the president and CEO of Willow Domestic Violence Center. Nice to have you back, Jamie.
Me.
Also here is Jeff Peer, the Director of Programs and Services at Willow. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Lisa Butt is the President and CEO of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
I want to make sure our audience understands exactly what our guests do, and you might have heard the name Willow. It's still relatively new. It's formerly Alternatives for Battered Women. And Jamie, just a brief outline of what you do on a yearly basis.
Sure thing. Our amazing team actually supports more than 7,000 survivors right here in Monroe County. We are the only licensed provider for domestic violence services. We are most known for our 40-bed emergency shelter, which is right now has 23 children and 19 women. We have our 24/7 hotline responding to 5,000 calls every year. We're in the courts helping with orders of protection. We're in the schools trying to teach about healthy relationships. And our counseling center is available for anybody in the community who needs our support and service.
Okay. And Lisa, your organization is the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. So tell us about your services.
Okay. Our agency has been around for 140 years. We provide services to children in a lot of different programs. Domestic violence, children from violent homes, we see in all of our services. Specifically, we work with kids who, for one reason or another, need to have supervised visitation, and we provide a safe spot for kids to maintain a relationship with their non-custodial parent. Often many of those families have experienced domestic violence.
Okay.
And we also have a family counseling program that is addresses the trauma that children experience from violence.
Jamie, I saw the numbers that are out now, and my first thought is, boy, this looks bad for Rochester. And but I don't know. I'm having trouble sort of understanding what the numbers are telling us. So let's first sort through what the numbers are and then what we might be learning from them. So when it comes to domestic violence, what's the headline to you?
The headline to me is that we have nearly 5,000 people who reached out for support through our legal system last year, and that is called for domestic violence incidents reports. There's over 50,000 calls made to 911 each year in Monroe County, and those are for domestic disputes. And yet we have to recognize that the majority of incidents of domestic violence never see the light of day. There is still such stigma and shame that many do not even report it through the official system. Does that mean that if we look at our rates, Monroe County is near double what the statewide rate is? The city of Rochester is nearly three times the statewide rate. You raise a great point, Evan. Do we know it's because we've got a great system here, that people feel safe and that they can step forward? Or is it that we actually have a problem, an epidemic? And I would say it's a combination of both. We know there are more that are suffering out there in the community that need to step forward and that we need to be there for them. But we also know that we have a long way to go because people don't feel comfortable to step forward. And if you look at the broader picture, it looks like the rates in our community have been decreasing. Yet we know at Willow Center, we know at the nonprofit agencies, we know across the country, when you look at the service providers, we still have wait lists. We turned away 1,600 people last year. So are people going through the system or are they not? And that's all of what we need to discuss and why we have a report and look at the data to ask those important questions.
Okay, so again, to put those numbers as starkly as we can, Monroe County, twice the statewide average, Rochester, three times the statewide average. It looks at least clear enough, Jamie, that people are more I don't want to say comfortable, but people are more willing to come forward. That has to be part of this, right?
We have a long history in Monroe County of working collaboratively. So we have been a standout, and we definitely applaud our partners. You know, SPCC here, Lisa, and we have 40 other plus agencies as part of a domestic violence consortium here locally. We work with, you know, the county partners and probation and law enforcement and the district attorney. Incredible dedicated system of response. But we also know the numbers are high, and we know they need to be higher because we know they're out there. We have to be ready to support them when they come forward.
Jeff Pears, the Director of Programs and Services at Willow Center. What did you make of those numbers? Did you sort of respond how I did, which is that in a sense I'm optimistic that more people are coming forward, but I'm also, yeah, one number of domestic violence is too much, let alone 5,000 in a year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what we call an epidemic. It's definitely out there. And what we know is that it's very underreported. There's many people that do not come forward to receive support and services because they don't maybe know what they're going to get, what they're going to run into, or what kind of stereotype or judgment they're going to face. A lot of the stuff that Willow does is a lot of education in the community to kind of bring awareness and to also help people understand that there are people in the community, multiple agencies that could support them through that transition of maybe trying to escape from a situation or just to have a conversation and talk to somebody. So the services that we're providing are definitely helping to reach out to those numbers.
We've heard from folks in the past who wonder about the question of people who don't come forward, and obviously we know it's not everybody who comes forward, but Jamie, you're saying there are a whole lot of people who don't come forward. And first question is, how do you know that?
People much smarter than me. So the Center for Disease Control actually studies this through their intimate partner survey that they do nationally. So they would actually make phone calls. So it's not going through the data we have are compiled through the justice system. So what's reported to New York State Department of Justice. The CDC will reach out using phone surveys, and that's how they can say 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men will be a victim of intimate partner violence in his or her lifetime. 1 in 3 women, 1 in 4 men. They also know that women experience more severe abuse and longer duration. So it's not an equal offender, but we don't want to negate or neglect that men are also victims. So the CDC looks at that. They have estimates from up to 70% of reports never see the light of day, and that is through phone surveys that they're able to quantify that. So that's what keeps us up at night, that we know that we have more work to do to be more accessible. Our hotline is 222-SAFE, and that is available 24/7, and we are there without judgment. Our services are free. Yeah. It could be you're a concerned neighbor. It could be that it's happening to you. We had a phone call from a 10-year-old boy in a closet while his parents were fighting. So we have a whole range of people who reach out. This is as close to crisis life-saving services as you can get.
A little bit later, I want to talk to Lisa much more specifically about just the question of what Jamie just mentioned, a 10-year-old boy hiding in a closet calling for help. And we're going to get to the impact of kids. But first, I want to listen to just a brief set of comments from a woman by the name of Brooke Axtell, and this is from the Grammys earlier this year. Interestingly, the Grammys invited her to tell her story, and she's a survivor of human trafficking and domestic violence. When Brooke was a child, her nanny sold her to men who raped her, and Axtell carried that secret of abuse into her adulthood, apparently. She became the victim of sexual violence, this time at the hands of a boyfriend in her adulthood. In this, what you're about to hear, you get the sense for a woman trying to work through, you know, do you get away? How do you get away? Why is someone doing this to you? Every person's different, but I think this is a powerful statement. Let's listen and we'll come back and talk about it.
After a year of passionate romance with a handsome, charismatic man, I was stunned when he began to abuse me. I believed he was lashing out because he was in pain and needed help. I believed my compassion could restore him and our relationship. My empathy was used against me. I was terrified of him and ashamed I was in this position. What bound me to him was my desire to heal him. My compassion was incomplete because it did not include me. When he threatened to kill me, I knew I had to escape. I revealed the truth to my mom, and she encouraged me to seek help at a local domestic violence shelter. This conversation saved my life. Authentic love does not devalue another human being. Authentic love does not silence, shame, or abuse. If you are in a relationship with someone who does not honor and respect you, I want you to know that you are worthy of love. Please reach out for help. Your voice will save you. Let it extend into the night. Let it part the darkness. Let it set you free to know who you truly are. Valuable, beautiful, loved.
That is Brooke Axtell, who is now the Director of Communications and Engagement for Allies Against Slavery, telling her own story. First of all, Jamie Saunders, that was at the Grammys earlier this year. Did you hear that at the time?
I did, and I just got chills again. The strength and the power of Brooke and the attention that it draws. I mean, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. There's many awareness months, but the point is that we talk about what is hidden in the shadows, and to have her stand in front of the Grammys with that audience is tremendous. We know that our young people are facing dating and domestic violence and sexual assault. We know it's there. The numbers are staggering. And to have someone as strong and beautiful and resilient on the Grammys, and I think then it was followed by Lady Gaga or some fabulous thing that others idolize, it was really powerful, and that people step up and reach out for help.
Lisa, what did you make of what you just heard?
It was very encouraging to hear somebody speak so public about a very well hidden secret in our community. We see so often that children think they are alone, they're isolated, nobody's experiencing what they're experiencing. When we talk about it affecting every aspect of a child's life, we truly see physically, emotionally, behaviorally, kids are impacted by violence. So I think for hopefully not many young kids were up that late at night, but that, you know, the message that this is not an isolated family issue, it's a community issue, mm-hmm. Is very powerful.
Jeff, what did you think?
I thought what she said was extremely powerful, like everyone else said. But one of the things I wanted to point to was she mentioned escaping. When people leave domestic violence situations, they don't leave them, they escape them, because it is a big step in their process of getting away. And we know that when somebody tries to escape a domestic violence situation, the lethality of that goes up by over 75%. So she said that right in her speech, that she escaped that situation. And she talked about the power and control. He isolated her, he silenced her, he put her in situations where she didn't feel that she had anyone else to go to, until she took that chance to tell her mother about what happened. So that's really powerful for people to understand, when they always ask that question, why don't they just leave?
Yeah, one of the ongoing parts of this conversation is why don't they just leave, which is, you know, a really judgmental, easy thing to say for people who haven't been on the inside. And what you heard from Brooke Axtell there in those comments was just one example. She said, quote, I had a desire to heal him. A desire to heal him. Jamie, how often do we hear that kind of a comment?
Often. You know, we all want to believe and to think that we can improve or help a situation. You don't want to give up. I mean, we're a romantic society. You also might have children with that individual. You might be financially dependent with that individual. So it is complicated. And yet, of course, the dialogue is, why doesn't she leave? Why doesn't he leave? Rather than, why are they being abused in the first place? What causes someone to harm another person? What causes someone to have power and control over them, to isolate them from their friends, to be verbally abusive, let alone physically abusive? You know, at the Willow Center, and Jeff and his team, you know, they do incredible work, and they see such atrocities. You know, it was a mother who was, you know, chained to a furnace while the kids were beaten upstairs. And then she finally escapes to us. And then what do we do with that? What is their future? How do you unlearn or unsee that? The amount of horrors that the staff see, and I know Lisa's team as well, were happening right here in Monroe County. We had a high-level executive from a well-known company in town, and she called us, where she had a journal where she would write the abuse that occurred to her, and she buried it in the yard, and she wanted us to know where it was in case she was ever found dead. These are the realities right here in our county, right here in our community. What I will say that I liked so much about Brooke is that when she turned and asked and shared her darkest secret to her mother, her mother's response was without judgment and for help. How hard is that as a parent if your adult daughter comes to you or your teen comes to you and says they're in an abusive relationship? It was so critical that the support system supported her without judgment and said, go to a domestic violence shelter. We can't solve it all as neighbors, as friends. That's when you turn to agencies like Willow Center or SPCC who are here to help.
She said, that conversation saved my life. And that is something that we hope resonates with people. I want to get to the phones here. And if you want to call the program about domestic violence, questions, comments, experience, and what we do going forward, you can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. From Willow Domestic Violence Center, Jamie Saunders and Jeff Peer are here, and Lisa Butt is here, who's the president and CEO of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. Jane in Rochester is first up. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes. It really seems like Rochester is having so many problems that we are just really coming in last in so many areas. It's not just all the shootings and the crime, but it's the crimes of domestic and family violence. It's the poor schools. It's the obscene of poverty. And I'm wondering if domestic violence is just an unfortunate, it's increased because we have all of these other problems that would possibly increase it or influence the numbers in one manner or another. So, because I was thinking about maybe the reason the numbers are so great is people, even in the middle classes, who want to leave or escape, fear falling into poverty, and then those who are in poverty simply don't have the resources and the flexibility to make a plan and follow through with it to escape. Could you comment, please? Thank you.
Jane, thank you. And people are probably wondering a lot about a lot of those issues related. So, Jamie, where do you start with that?
Jane, you're brilliant and right on point on all of the remarks that you just made. You know, domestic violence is 100% preventable. It is also learned behavior. And when we look at all these terrible things that have happened that we read about, from, you know, second worst for childhood poverty in the nation to four domestic violence homicides in 5 weeks earlier this year. When we look at, you know, early education, we look at attendance, we look at teen pregnancy, all of these community social ills, if you scratch beneath the surface, I will nearly guarantee that domestic violence is there. And that is what the folks that Lisa sees at SPCC working with these families. It starts young and it's learned, and that can set up a family for success or failure into their future.
I want to get to our next caller, who is wishing to remain anonymous, a woman calling now and from Rochester. And go ahead.
Okay, so I'm 25, and in high school, I was in an abusive relationship with a guy, which was really stupid, but it was. And you were talking about these people that say, like, oh, why don't you just get out? You can't get out because you've trained yourself to think that this is normal. And with the abusive boyfriend, I was abused by my birth parents, and, you know, it's just been a part of my life, so you find it as normal. But once you do get out of it, you see the world in a light that you didn't see before. And so I think instead of saying, you know, like, why don't we get out, I think we should be inspiring women to say, it's okay to talk about it. There are people that are going to protect you. It's okay.
Let's let our go ahead, Jeff. Sure. Well, let me ask the caller to stay on the line just for a second. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you for calling, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that when you were younger, and to hear that you have found some light and able to move on from that, and what that has done for you is truly inspiring and amazing. So thank you for the call. You're absolutely right. It is normalized when you live in a world where there is abuse around you, whether it's from your family or the people that you love, you do get trapped into that cycle and it does become normal. So to reach for help, to look for help, or to even ask might seem unnormal for people because you don't even realize there's something wrong. So the fact that you did find that strength and you were able to find the people to talk to and they were able to provide that support for you is truly a blessing, and it's great that you're able to do that. And I think it's very safe to say that there's many people at that young age that are in those violent relationships, and they just don't know who to turn to. We encourage friends, family, natural supports, but that's also why Willow Centers is around as well, to have professionals in the community that understand this situation. And we encourage people to call our hotline and talk to trained counselors and advocates to support them do that. But thank you for calling. That was truly inspiring.
Lisa and Jamie, any thoughts you want to share here? Lisa, go ahead.
I just would also commend you for making the call and sharing, because I don't think you're alone. There's many people who are either in a violent relationship or who have experienced a violent relationship, and they blame themselves. And we want you to know that you're not alone and that it's not your fault, and that's commendable that you got out.
Let me ask the woman on the line before I let her go here. And first, I agree with our panelists. I really admire you and respect you, and thanks for taking the time to call the program. Yeah, do you have any thought? Have you thought about how we fix this? Especially with your own experience, what would you want our audience to hear?
Well, when I was in high school, even when I was in this and I was going through depression and all the other crap that comes with it, I was defending other women that were having worse abuse than I was. And so I was telling them, you know, I'll talk to you about whatever you want. It's okay. And I would transfer them to people that could help them. So I think we just need to get this discussion going and not be afraid. Like, if someone comes to you and say, I'm being abused, we don't go, oh, well, what'd you do? But we go, well, that's not okay. Let's get you help for that.
Mm. Do you feel there's still too much victim blaming?
I don't think we mean to, but I think, like, if someone says, oh, I've been raped by my boyfriend, we go, well, what did you do to deserve it? We don't mean to, but we do it because it's the stigma in our culture. Mm.
That's a good point.
Thank you so much for the call. I'll let her go now and let Jamie Saunders respond to some of what you just heard as well. Go ahead, Jamie.
Well, I think that Jane was right on point, that we have to talk about what is uncomfortable, right? That is what we need to make sure. I had even just a lecture I was giving last week, and I had someone say, well, how can a boyfriend rape you? That doesn't, like, it just is such a foreign idea if you're already dating someone. I think it is unintentional at times, but we have to educate ourselves about the core principle is that everybody has the right to be safe. Nobody has the right to have power and control over you and your decisions, and that we need to focus on what a healthy relationship is. And when we make sure we remove that stigma, remove that shame, that we are a place where we listen and we do that without judgment. It's hard. I think many of us, we hear of a problem and we want to fix it. We want to offer advice. We want to give them a path forward. And it's not our path. We have to support each individual victim and survivor on their own journey, because we don't know what it is like to be in their shoes.
And on the question of how can a boyfriend rape you, I thought it was interesting several months ago when a presidential candidate, an attorney for a presidential candidate, threatened the media when an old story from more than 20 years ago was dredged up about a presidential candidate at the time. And this is a candidate who some of our listeners think that I pile on, but there's a lot of material out there. And the question was, the ex-wife of this candidate had accused in the past, and I think that they've reconciled, had accused in the past that while they were married, the man raped her. And the attorney threatened the media and said, well, first of all, they were married. How could he have raped her? Now, Jamie Saunders, I would ask you what you think about the comment, but I'm actually more interested in hearing your thoughts about the reaction to that, because most of the reaction I saw was derision towards sort of this backwards view. And I thought it was somewhat healthy to hear most people say, wait a second, that is a very ridiculous response, that, you know, if an ex-wife is claiming that, she had no right to claim it because they were married. What did you think?
I would love to look at it in that positive way, right? We've come a long way in terms of recognizing what was assumed behavior, you know, that goes back to particularly spouses being property. So thank goodness that people are raising eyebrows at that and not tolerating it. But there's so many other undercurrents where that message is complicated, and that there is still inequality between relationships that is just so much at the forefront. I was thrilled to see people stepping up, but we also had you know, that
plenty of people on the other side.
Plenty of people on the other side, and even going back to the commentator, that her, you know, her remarks were because she, you know, was menstruating. So I mean, the whole country has this odd dance with women and their ability to be treated as equal and respected partners. And this is the undercurrent, truly, of why every 9 seconds in this country a woman is beaten or abused. Every 9 seconds.
1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men will experience domestic violence, according to numbers, and the newest numbers released by Willow Domestic Violence Center in their report to the community out last week. WXXI News has been reporting on this, and this hour we're talking about domestic violence and what we do next. In our short break here, after our short break here, we're going to come back, talk about the impact on children, talk about what we all can do as we look for solutions to the question of domestic violence with our guests. Jamie Saunders and Jeff Peer are here from Willow Domestic Violence Center, that's formerly Alternatives for Bettered Women, and Lisa Butt is here, the president and CEO of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. The conversation continues next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections, first hour, we look at the nature of false confessions. Was there a false confession of a murder that led a man to a life sentence in Attica? Well, now another murderer in Attica says he committed that crime, and the man currently serving time should go free. We'll talk about it. Then second hour, a $15 minimum wage, not just in fast food, but across the board statewide. That's all Wednesday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Corning Museum of Glass, presenting its contemporary art and design wing. The new space features 120 contemporary works in glass and a 500-seat hot glass demonstration space. CMOG.org.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. If you want to weigh in on domestic violence and these related issues, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. And if we're still hanging on to the notion that this is just a city problem, Jamie Saunders, what do the numbers say?
Well, our recent report, as we talked about, shows that compared to the state, the Monroe County has double the rates of the statewide rate, and the city of Rochester is 3 times. That's when you adjust for population. But when we look at the raw numbers, what really struck us this time is that there were more reports in the suburbs, raw reports, people calling for help. There were more in the suburbs than the city. And we could say, oh, absolutely, because there's more people out there, but that has not been the case for the prior 8 years that the data has been collected. What does that mean? That means that we are seeing that more in our suburban communities are reaching out for help, and that's a good thing. We know that 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men will suffer from domestic violence. They're there in all demographics across all zip codes. So it was refreshing to see that. It's going in the right direction because we need to be there to support, and there's all these complications, particularly in the middle and upper class, in terms of the financial, what can feel like handcuffs to be able to step forward with all of the changes that can come from that.
What do you think, Jeff? What does that say to you?
Well, it says that there's definitely abuse occurring anywhere. Domestic violence doesn't have a face. It doesn't identify in any way, shape, or form. So I think with the resources that are out there, the awareness that is occurring, and the fact that people are understanding that there's people that could support them and help them in these transitions, there's a lot of isolation and fear, especially in the suburban homes as well, because what Jamie referenced earlier was there's a lot of financial restraint. Maybe they rely codependence on the finances in the home. Or in a lot of the abuse cases that we see, there's a lot of financial abuse where the person that is being abused has had their credit destroyed, their bank accounts wiped out, and they really don't have the means to move forward and get the support they need.
And Jeff, what message would you want to send to anybody who, wherever they are, is feeling like, I have to get out, but divorce is expensive. My finances could be destroyed. I cannot move forward. I will be dependent in some way. I won't be able to maintain the life that we've had. What do you say to people in that situation?
I would say those are all valid fears, and those are all valid reasons that would make you question why would you want to leave. However, there are services and programs in the community that support people. We work closely with Legal Aid. We work closely with many other partner agencies that talk about those topics and support our clients that fear that they might end up in poverty, or they might lose their home, or they might lose their kids in this process. So we, as Willow, what we like to talk about is we like to build the team for you. So when you come forward and you're able able to reach out for support and services, you might feel isolated and alone. But when you call Willow, we actually build a team around you of experts that will keep you informed, provide you the options so you can make the best decision for yourself. And that's really our goal.
Talking about domestic violence and talking also with Lisa Butt, who is the president and CEO of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children. And in our brief break, I was told something that I found quite surprising. And I hope, Lisa, you'll fill me in here. The Society for the Protection and Care of Children was founded after, what was founded first?
The Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. So in 1875, a little girl was identified as being abused in New York City, and some concerned neighbors took her to the attention of the gentleman who started the Humane Society, and he petitioned the court saying that she deserved as many rights as animals to be protected. And that was our first case of domestic of child abuse. And so SPCC, Society for the Protection and Care of Children, came out of protection of animals.
SPCA.
It's a little backwards.
it's really remarkable because when I heard the acronym SPCC, my brain goes to SPCA. I'm more used to hearing it.
Yep.
As sad as that is.
Well, and I know Lisa is working to change that. I want to listen, if we could, to another sound clip I have from a very public figure. It's Halle Berry, a longtime actress, talking about not only domestic violence, but her experience as a child and the possible impact and her concerns on the impact of domestic violence on children. This is Halle Berry when she was talking to NBC's Natalie Morales a few years back, talking about her own experience and her advocacy.
My mother was a battered woman, so that was my childhood for a good chunk of it. And I really care about these women and these children. And if I can find a way to help, it's what I feel like I have to do.
Have you ever asked your mother, why did you put up with that?
And she's still trying to discover that for herself, answer those tough questions. Why did she put up with that and subject her children to growing in that environment? Because we're still dealing with the effects of it, my sister and I too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep question. It's not one that's easily answered.
And for women who are in this situation right now and who may be watching this, do you have a message for them?
Get out. Just get out. We're so worth it as women and as people and as mothers. And if you can't do it for yourself, and I understand that, not loving yourself enough, get out right away for your children.
Lisa, what do we know, Lisa, about the impact on children when they see a parent battering a parent?
We know that it has a profound impact on children on every aspect of their lives. From utero, we have learned that children are impacted. Brain development can be delayed. We see kids regressing in development. Kids who were once potty trained suddenly are wetting their bed again. We see kids who physically act out the aggression that they observe, whereas other children become totally withdrawn and can't engage. So certainly throughout the lifespan, we see this pervasively impacting children.
And we just heard Halle Berry, actress, talking about her own background, watching her mother be abused, and her advice for other parents out there, particularly in light of doing it for your kids. So Lisa, is that the way you would frame it as well? When Halle Berry says, I understand women who feel like I can't get out, I can't do it, but you've got to think about your kids do it for your kids. Would you frame it that way as well?
I believe that so many women do it for their children. Mm-hmm. They can get free and they can gain the power to fight and get out of an abusive situation because of their love for their children, but not all are able to. And that children hold out that hope. I've heard many kids talk about, my mother always told me that she would leave if he hit me. And so kids wait for that first time that they get hit. And often still, that mother's not able to get out of that abusive situation. It gets tighter and tighter and more difficult to escape. So I think that, yeah, it's lifelong impact on kids. We see it
Jamie and Jeff, thoughts on the same kind of question in your own experience at Willow? Jeff?
Yeah, what I would just like to add to that is, you know, a lot of times mothers stay in these situations to protect their kids. There's a lot of times where that line is drawn for the mother where they say, if he hits you, or, and I don't mean to say he or she, but if the abusive parent is hitting the child, they will leave. But that moment never comes, because the mother's staying in that relationship to be that buffer, to be that defense, so the child is never the target of that abuse. So we just want to be aware of that as well. And I think when survivors are in that mode of, I'm going to stay in this relationship because I could handle the abuse, so the abuse isn't targeted onto the my child, I'm staying in this relationship because I love my kids. And if I was to leave, I risk them being alone with this abuser. So that is a whole dynamic that any parent, if you imagine having children, imagine having that thought process, leaving your child with someone that's a monster.
Allison emails the program and wants to know if there are resources not just for women, but for women and their children if the woman does decide to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is a great question. We have multiple resources. We have our emergency confidential shelter that houses victims of domestic violence that are fleeing and escaping their situations. Currently, we have, like Jamie said earlier, 19 women and 23 children in our shelter. Shelter is a safe location. It has everything you'll need to stay there and be safe, supportive counseling, case management, support, advocacy. We provide over 70,000 meals a year come out of our shelter. It's as comfortable of a setting that it could be, providing the fact that you're escaping a situation. We also have a wonderful, wonderful children's program. And when we talk about kids and that have suffered trauma and the effects, the long-term effects on that they have on them, in Willow, we believe that we just don't want our kids to just come here and like survive with us. We want them to thrive. So when they come to us not speaking or stop potty training, by the time they leave, many of them have excelled in those areas and they've improved. So that trauma is starting to heal.
Lisa, how, I don't know how to ask this other than to say, how reversible or how fixable is the impact on a child? Let's say you've got a toddler or a 6 or an 8-year-old who has been witnessing. Because I imagine when you're working with children who have witnessed their, often their father abusing a mother, not always, I understand, mm-hmm. but usually a man abusing their mother, it's often not just one time. And what is the process like to work to repair some of that damage? And you know, give us a sense of hope, I guess, for what can come out of that once people reach out.
Okay, as Jamie spoke to earlier, it's a learned behavior, so it can be untaught. And as Jeff just alluded to, the trauma. The earlier we can intervene with kids who have experienced trauma, the more likely they will heal from that trauma and be able to restore their lives and have full, healthy lives. So I think that the important thing is that we get intervention in there, that there's services available for families to address what they're going through. Kids need a healthy person, a person they can confide in, somebody they can talk with. They need to know they're not alone.
Okay, Jamie, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, it's we actually partner gratefully with SPCC to help address trauma with the kids in our children's program, because they are the experts and they're just tremendous partners. You know, I think it's a lot what Jeff articulates and is embedded at Willow Center is that when someone is acting out, it's not to say what's wrong with you, but more of what happened. And what happened to you and why. It's not to blame a person. And that goes for our children as well. You know, often the children that need the most love are the ones that can appear pretty unlovable because they're acting out and they're really crying out for that support and that attention. You know, I think it's to recognize that children absorb their sponges and they learn from us. So they're watching us. You know, I think in our own house, we have a rule that you don't raise your voice. And we do that often. We repeat it. But some days it's harder than others, right? When you're asking for the 15th time to brush your teeth or go to bed or have you done your homework, right? It's hard in the healthiest of environments. imagine with all the stresses and strains that are really unthinkable, unimaginable horrors that are happening in these families' lives, both the violence in the home and the violence out on the street for many, that impacts decision-making, that impacts how you can go to school in the morning, that impacts all of these expectations that we have. And that's where we have to really make sure that we're paying attention and support our children and really approach it from a position without judgment, but really from a place of support and frankly, love.
Trish writes to us on Twitter. She says, so many women are killed by their partners with a gun. Another part of that conversation that often goes unspoken. Yes or no, Jamie?
Very true. Very true.
Yeah?
Very true. And I know that could be a whole other show in terms of that. But you know, you can't refute the studies. But if there is a gun in the home, really, women have a higher chance of being murdered when there is guns in the home. In terms of gun ownership, it is the least safe place for a woman in our country is her home. So it is part of the larger narrative.
Okay, and let me ask our panel to respond to part of the conversation from yesterday that I think bears repeating, because sometimes when we talk about guns in this country, it feels intractable. It feels like no one is going to be willing to open your mind and listen to the other. And I want to share an example of where that's not true. And I want to get our panel's response. Michael Shermer is the publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He's a libertarian. He has been, in his words, a pro-gun libertarian his whole life. And when he was married with children, he had a .357 Magnum in the house to, in his own words, rip to shreds. The bullets were designed to rip to shreds any human who would invade and attack his family. And he wrote over the weekend that when he had marital problems, he decided to read the research. And he read the research, and it said that when you've got a gun in the home, it is 22 times more likely to be used in a combination of the following: suicide, children accidentally discovering it and injuring or killing, or violence against a woman. 22 times more likely to be used that way than to be used successfully to prevent a home invader. And he decided, I'm taking the guns out of the house. We're having marital problems. I'm not thinking that I'm going to shoot my wife. But I know what the research says, and the guns are going to be out. And that was a really remarkable thing for me to read in a time when it feels like no one is willing to change. Mm-hmm. Let me go around the table. Jamie, what do you think of that?
I think that's powerful. We also know that guns, unregulated guns, get into the hands of all sorts of people. So I think it's really encouraging. He's right about the stats. It is high likelihood. Again, it is the least safe place is inside the home, less likely than to have an intruder or a home invasion. But it also is a right to have guns in this society. So I think it has to be about the responsible. But we also shouldn't have the false notion that guns, even when they're taken away because of an order of protection, for example, and the guns can be removed from the perpetrator to keep the victim safe, you know, all channels can't be turned off. And so we always have to have our safety alert up and safety plan and be prepared and to be as safe as we can.
Okay. Now, Lisa, what do you make of the story of a man deciding, I'm taking the guns out because we're having marital problems and I know what the research says?
I think that's powerful, and I just think for children, how terrifying to be in a violent home and know that there's weapons accessible. So that was a bold move, I think, and a good move on his part. Why yeah. not err on the side of being safe?
Sure, yeah. And Jeff, you know, this wasn't a guy who was saying, we're violent to each other. We're just having marital problems. Maybe it ends in divorce. Maybe we fix it, but I'm going to make this move anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's a tough decision, I think, for anyone that's pro-gun. And I think for people that know the research and know the studies that say that gun violence does occur in the home when the domestic violence domestic violence situations, and a lot of times the gun is used as the fear mechanism already, just knowing the gun's in the house. That's the power of control, whether it's brought out or not. So for him to make that decision, I think just is a stance for himself and for his family to say, I'm going to make this a gun-free zone for my home so everyone feels safe so we can do what's right for our family.
A couple more listener comments as we talk about domestic violence with our guests for the hour. Jamie Saunders and Jeff Peer are here from Willow Domestic Violence Center, that's formerly Alternatives for Battered Women, and Lisa Butt is the president and CEO of the Society for the Protection and Care of Children, SPCC. Emma just wants to know if your guests do advise women who have been battered to get a gun and protect themselves. I don't know if there's an easy answer to that, but, or if there is a position that our guests take. I'll start with Jamie. Jamie's looking at me saying, don't ask me.
I would have you go.
Okay, Jeff, go ahead.
Our stance on that is no. We don't tell people to go get a gun if you're in a domestic violence situation to protect yourself.
Okay, and why?
Because that's not necessarily the answer. It's because if you're going to stay in that situation, the gun isn't going to stop the person from trying to control you. It could lead to you having to have to shoot and kill somebody in a situation, and we just saw that whole situation with the Tan case occur, and who knows what that looks like, because that's still the jury's still out on that. But you bring guns into a situation, the end result is going to be someone's going to die. And what if the abuser gets that gun? Who knows what could happen, puts the kids at risk. We don't advise that. Our advice is always to try to escape the situation and then get into a safe situation for yourself.
All right. So Jeff, and this is not meant to be a political question. I'm just trying to work through reality. And again, reality this hour is domestic violence is a problem. We've got to try to fix it. Mm-hmm. Yesterday on this program, the local director, the rep from SCOPE, the Monroe County Chapter of SCOPE, which is the Shooters Committee on Political Education, said that, because I said on the show, I said, look, I'm just trying to work through the numbers. And the numbers, this idea that putting a gun in a woman's hand and she fends off domestic violence is unfortunately almost a unicorn. We so rarely see it successfully in this country compared to all of the other ways guns are used. And his response was, well, women feel like if they shoot, they're going to be charged with murder, and maybe we should change the system so women would feel more comfortable using a gun if they were threatened. And I'd never heard that before. I admit that. I'd never heard it. I'd never considered it that way. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that's that's a policy decision, a legislative decision, but the reality is the way the laws stand now, you have to prove abuse. Okay, you have to prove self-defense, and again, go back to the Tan case. We're seeing that right now as well, but there has to be more responsibility put on the perpetrator, the abuser, and less responsibility put on the victim. So what I mean by that is we can't always hold the victim to that high standard of, why did she do this? Why did she respond this way? But when we never look at what the perpetrator did to bring that fear in, to bring that violence into the home, and we really have to balance that out. So what he's saying, there's a point to that. But right now, the reality is the laws say, you're going to have to prove abuse or prove self-defense, and that's a challenge.
Okay. Jamie, what do you think?
I think violence teaches violence. So if all of the things can go bad when the impetus of obtaining a gun is for defense against your intimate partner. I have fired a gun. It felt actually pretty good. It felt pretty powerful, but it was in a very structured environment, and it's not because of to protect my life. And that's where I think we get this delineation. It can't be the end-all be-all in terms of our protection. It can give us false sense of protection. Just because I take a karate class doesn't mean I should walk down a dark alley and it's my fault if I'm assaulted, right? You have to make sure that we, yes, we have tools and we can feel empowered to make sure that victims feel supported, that survivors have that strength, but we have to focus on the perpetrator. Why do they do it in the first place?
Okay. So the advice anyway, Emma, is not for women who feel threatened or who are being abused to get a gun. And that's coming from the experts here. Jenna writes, perhaps the NFL should do a little less pink and a little more purple.
Oh, I love it. Yes, yes.
That was an easy yes.
Yeah.
That was a softball of a question.
Well, and truly, actually, there are more victims of domestic violence than breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and diabetes combined. It impacts more women. And yet, it is all pink. We're watching the NFL, and it is very powerful. And I've lost loved ones to breast cancer. It's we know many. It's not to discount that, but it helps to reduce stigma when we have such visible recognition.
Okay, and let me also say for our listeners who think, "Boy, now you're attacking breast cancer research?"
No way.
No. And in fact, go back last Wednesday and listen to the podcast of this program on pinkwashing. Our friends at the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester are concerned that we're a little overboard with pink without actual results. So absolutely not. It's not a question of choosing one or the other over the other, or it's not a matter of saying there's not value in it, but there's a lot that you might not realize about the money that doesn't go that you think it probably goes to breast cancer causes. And we tried to cover that last Wednesday. I certainly encourage you to check it out. Elizabeth Murray, who's going to be on this program on Thursday, a local doctor who is just such a wonderful person. On this program on Thursday, we're going to be talking about the viral story of a dad and a stepdad who work together to take the daughter down the aisle. You know, the dad reaching out to the stepdad, and you know, Lisa's got this big smile. Isn't that an awesome story? So Dr. Murray's going to be on this program on Thursday, saying that is great. Unfortunately, a lot of divorced parents almost war with each other and compete, and the impact on kids. So even outside of domestic violence, what would you want to leave sort of our audience with as we get ready for that conversation Thursday? The impact on kids when they see parents, whether it's physically abusive, verbally abusive, competing, not getting along. What would you say?
It has a huge impact. Kids love both of their parents, and they want to have permission to love both of their parents. So we need to, in those situations that it might not be safe, create a safe way that kids can have contact and love both parents freely without worrying that they're going to alienate themselves from their custodial parent. Both parents need to give their kids permission to love the other parent.
Okay, about 40 seconds left, and Jamie Saunders, I'll give you the last word. What do you want to leave our audience with? There's so much going on this month. You've had an event last weekend. What do you want people to know that's going on in the community?
Well, it is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and there's more than 20 events ranging from lecture series to happy hours to all sorts of fundraisers happening. Full calendar is available at willowcenterny.org. We have an art show, actually, tomorrow that's starting, which is survivor art, very powerful, at the University of Rochester Medical Center. A lot of wonderful events that are happening to raise awareness and funds. I thought you were going to ask me how to solve domestic violence, but this is part of it, so I'm so grateful you're letting us talk and shine the light on it.
Well, you always tell me there's no perfect answer for it, but shining the light on it and a community awareness is a great first step. Once again, if you want to find the calendar of what's going on this month, Jamie, where is it?
willowcenterny.org.
You do such important work for this community. It's always an honor to have you on the program. Jamie and Jeff from Willow, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
And Lisa, it's SPCC. What an amazing history lesson, and thank you for the work that you do. It's great to have you here this hour.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for listening to the program. Thanks to the engineer of Connections, Val LaBanca, and the producer, Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson, and this has been Member Supported Public Radio.